Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Carla Campbell. I am back. I've been away for a couple of weeks now, last two Saturdays. So I'm just getting my health back and getting back on track to being here. For those of you who may have been wondering what has happened, it's just that I've been sick, and then I had a couple of things I needed to take care of with my job. So anyways, but I'm back today, and I am here, happy to be back, excited to be back, so that we can get on track to have our discussions. And today I'm looking to my topic is going to be pretty deep, and so I would love for those of you who are out there to give me a call. The topic today will be on mental health, addressing the crisis of Black youth suicide. And the reason why I've decided to take on this topic for today is because, you know, I work with the youth all the time. I'm a professor at the college. And so I also have young people of my own, young men who are trying to find their way in this society, young Black men who are trying to find their way, as well as my daughter, who's also trying to find her way. And I have taken note of this, especially during COVID, when we were on lockdown. And we were, a number of students were now being instructed from home. And that's when we begin to see the gap, the economical gap, the social gap, the racial gap of students who the have and the have-nots, students who didn't own a laptop, students who didn't have resources, who were being left behind academically. During COVID, you know, there were so many police brutality, fatalities that were taking place, and young people were out protesting, and we have Black Lives Matter, and that came out of the situation with Trayvon Martin. Of course, this was maybe some 5-6 years earlier, prior to George Floyd. And so I have noticed that our numbers are increasing with regards to mental health in our communities, something that we typically don't address. For some of us in our communities, we think it's you don't need to go to talk to a counselor. Take it to Jesus. That's how we as African Americans treat that. We take it within our religious mindsets and our religious teachings. Just take it to Jesus. But people need to understand what mental health is and what it isn't. And I think that it's important for us to understand that, because we're losing our children. We're losing our youth. The George Floyd situation didn't help. And now with the Tyrone Nichols situation, when society and racial disparity tells a young person of color that you're not worth anything, even in our educational systems, the prison to pipeline, our children are being told every day, you don't matter. But I wanted to take a look at this because suicide amongst youth was not always the case. We were not always at the top of the list for this. And so many of you who have listened to me before, I've always told you, I will do my homework. I will do the research. I'm not just coming from my own personal experience, but I'm also wanting to support you guys with the facts and with information and with stats. And so here from the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. And it states here that since 2017, suicide has been the second leading cause of death in those between the ages of 10 to 19 years old. And the rates of suicide among Black youth have risen faster than in any other racial ethnic group in the past two decades, with suicide rates in Black males between the ages of 10 to 19 years old increasing by 60%. 60%. Early adolescent Black youth are twice as likely to die by suicide as compared to their white counterparts. Now, we know that this was not always the case. This has been the case in the last two decades. How is that? How is it that a 10-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old would kill themselves? Some would say social media. I know I did a talk some weeks back when I was talking about mental health and social media, which is real, and social media and its implications and the impact that it has on our young people. But to sit here and to think about the atrocities that have taken place in our communities, and not just amongst the youth who are living in families where parents are struggling mentally, parents are struggling with their own mental health and their own social struggles, living in poverty and not having enough to make ends meet, facing racial disparities of being treated unequally, unjustly. So it's not hard for me to grasp those numbers. It's not hard for me at all. I am very aware of the fact that mental health is huge among our youth, period, not just African Americans, Hispanic, Latinx, but amongst white students as well, and amongst our white counterparts. But the numbers are staggering amongst children of color, youth of color. And we need to really sit down and think about this and really try our best to work with our youth, because they're suffering. They are suffering. And so I just wanted to put it out there and want to have this conversation as to why these things are happening. Understanding and changing the trajectory, here I'm reading from the source again, where it says, understanding and changing this trajectory will require transdisciplinary efforts, including those of educators, meaning all of our teachers of color out there, educators, child welfare, legal and juvenile justice systems, healthcare professionals, including child and adolescent psychiatrists, and the community at large. Well, child welfare needs to be, that's a system in itself that's broken, and it needs to be fixed. The legal system is broken when it comes to children of color, people of color, and it needs to be fixed. But notice all these things that have been listed here as to how we must come together as a community. We have issues that need to be fixed because it's not set up for the success of brown and black children. It just isn't. So what is it that the community needs to do? We have the church, and some people would say, well, yeah, we have the church, but there are some places where churches are not equipped to work with people in terms of mental health. People are needing to understand that mental health is a biological, metaphysical situation, hormonal situation, but it's also packed on by trauma. And some of it is packed on by trauma. And so we need to open up our understanding as to where and how we can next help the next generation to get through their situations. Data shows that community violence, here we go, social economic stress, perceived discrimination, stigma, and interpersonal and family conflict are greater predictors for suicide in Black children and adolescents than in their white peers. And that is absolutely true, because our white peers are not having to face some of these other situations. They don't have the obstacles of discrimination. They don't have the obstacles of social economic stress. They don't have the obstacles, some of them, in living in violent communities. I attended a workshop, oh, maybe about a week ago, and it was a young man who was talking about, he came in to do a workshop on mental health amongst African Americans and the disparities among African Americans and how African American communities need healing. And he took the audience all the way back to slavery and how slavery and its implications have been perpetuated from generation to generation to generation to generation, that it becomes a part of our DNA. And so when he was talking about how we as Black people in general in their communities, he said, hurt people hurt people. So when you have someone who is injured or hurting, they will have a tendency to hurt someone else out of their pain. And that was his explanation as to what that was about, as to why we have the Black-on-Black crime and so forth and so on. And I'm not going to get into that because that's not my topic. But I thought I'd bring that up because the mental health portion of that is very important, that we need to address these things. We are least likely to go to counseling. We are least likely to seek professional help for psychological counseling or psychological evaluations, because some of us don't believe in it, right? And because we're so traumatized, we have a tendency to just keep things to ourselves and pray about it, as we say, and we move on. But our bodies are telling us, hey, we're under stress. Our bodies are telling us, hey, wait a minute, this is too much. And so for our youth for today, they don't have those mechanisms in place. And so, but this is just now, this is me speaking here. So I don't want you to just take this and saying this is gospel because of what Carla said. As far as the information that I'm giving to you, yes, I'm reading that from a source. I'm giving that to you, but I'm also speaking to you from my own experiences. And so, but I just want us to be clear that our mental health issues amongst our youth is a crisis. It's a growing crisis, and we need to address it. The suicide rate is high, and we need to address it. Yes, violence in our community is extremely high, and we still need to address it. And so, but I always say that the violence within the community is just a symptom of what's really going on that hasn't been addressed. And so here in the, I was, the earlier, the first article I was reading from was from the American Academy of Child and Adolescents. And so here we have another article addressing the crisis of Black youth. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but every September there is a Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. September is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. And why do we have the need to address that? September, Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We have all of these awareness that is wearing our society down. But Suicide Prevention Awareness Month is something new. This is something that we have begun to put on the books, so to speak, so that people can be aware of the fact that suicide is high. It's high. When we look at celebrities such as Twitch, the young man, the dancer who took his life a couple of months ago now at the age of 40, this is real. Or Regina King's son at the age of 27, I believe, who committed suicide. This is a real crisis. And we really need to get on board as to how we can work with our youth. There are things that our youth don't have in our communities that they should have. But because of economical, social economical conditions, they don't have it. So looking at this article, Addressing the Crisis of Black Youth, one often overlooked aspects of rising rates of suicide in the U.S., its impact on youth, and in particular, its impact on black youth. Black people face increased rates of risk factors, including experiences of racism. Once again, here's a second article. Racism, higher rates of unemployment, and financial and food insecurity disparities and other aspects of health, and limited access to care, all of which result in an increased burden of mental illness in black communities. Despite this heavy burden, black people and individuals in other racial and ethnic minority groups have historically had relatively low rates of suicide. But this has been changing recently, especially for black youth. As of 2018, suicide became the second leading cause of death in black children aged 10 to 14. And the third leading cause of death in black adolescents aged 15 to 19. By combining data from the 2001 to 2015, researchers were able to examine suicides among children ages 12 and younger and found that black children were more likely to die by suicide than their white peers. That's overwhelming. Something that we, that as a community, you would have never really heard about that. Why has this increased? Why has this become, in its own sense, a pandemic amongst the black community? What is it? What is causing this? What is driving this? And I know that the researcher who wrote this article is talking about the racism, but black folks have dealt with racism all their lives, from slavery on the way out to the civil rights movement and throughout the 60s and throughout the 70s. And still, why is it such a great obstacle today? Higher rates of unemployment. So it has to be a combination of things. It can't just be one. Higher rates of unemployment, financial and food insecurities, disparities in other aspects of health. There are people who are living in rural areas that in the black communities who don't have adequate health care. So we have to give that a thought. And we have young people who are living in impoverished neighborhoods and urban cities. How do we reach that? And they have churches in those neighborhoods. And I say that lovingly because I'm just saying that if the church is going to be an establishment that is going to be helping their people, it really needs to get on board as to what's going on. What's happening with our young people? What is happening not just with our young people, but our community as a whole? And so I hope that as I'm disseminating this information and sharing this story with you with regards to suicide, because I am aware personally of young people who have taken their lives. And you can't really explain it. It's something you just can't explain. You can feel the pain of the parent, and the things that they miss and the signs that they miss and the things that they weren't aware of. Oh, he'll grow out of it. Oh, it's just he's just going through a change right now. And so we make excuses for him. We're not even aware of the fact that maybe there's something deeper going on. And it's not to say that parents should be paranoid, but in this day and age in which with so much information being disseminated to our young people and to our society as a whole, we have to slow down and take the time out and say, hey, what can I do to, you know, what is it that I'm missing with regards to my son or my daughter or my niece or my nephew? Because if we don't take the time out, it can be too late. It can be proven to be too late. But because of our culture, we don't believe in it. We're not steeped or learned or disciplined when it comes to the psychological aspects of our society. We say, take it to Jesus and it'll be all right, right? That's what we do. We pray about it, give it to God. And that's how we dismiss it. And we don't take the time out to address it as a real medical situation. This is a real medical situation. And some people don't see it that way. And it says here, he says, more research is needed on how suicide risks develop among Black youth and how it can be best prevented. Significant questions remain in terms of understanding and predicting suicide risk among Black youth, while some risk factors have been well researched and are clear. Here goes the gender biases, the victims of bullying and bullying others, and discrimination against the LGBT community, exposure to trauma, and racial discrimination. There are other risk factors that are less clear. For example, some researchers that suggest that Black adolescents who have contemplated or attempted suicide are less likely to have been diagnosed with a mental illness. Another significant risk factor is access to firearms. And we can go on and on and on about this, but the key thing is not being diagnosed with a mental illness because we don't go to doctors. Right? Some of us don't have access to a doctor. Some of us don't have access to that. And then when we do, some of us won't accept it. Oh, there's nothing wrong with Johnny. He's okay. He'll be all right. You know? And so this is something that we need to be educated on. We need to come to an understanding of how medically this affects families. We're talking about generational stuff, stuff that was passed down from. I hate to go back there again and talk about slavery, but you know the implications of slavery are still there. The DNA of slavery is still there. I know there are some that would argue that point and say, no, you know, Kala, that's not totally true. This is a new generation, but when you look at what's happened and as we come up as the communities have come up from slavery and then Reformation and then Jim Crow and here we are with Black Lives Matter, and these things just continue to perpetuate itself because of the society and the systems in which we live in. And so until these systems have been disrupted, until the systems have been broken down, it can be very difficult. Now, in spite of all those things, yes, there have been successes. There have been the first Black to do this, the first Black president, the first Black to be on the Supreme Court, the first. I mean, we've always done first. It shouldn't always be like that, but that's the way it is. And so when you look at young people who are looking at these things on a regular basis and they see things that they normally would not have seen because of social media, where you go on a trip with your friends and you find out that your friends are plotting to kill you. And there is no justice for that. And so as a young person coming through the ranks of this particular society today, it makes it very difficult to even have a glimmer of hope that, hey, what can I mean, what am I here for? When society is telling me I don't matter. When society is telling me you don't matter. We're not going to invest in you. When society says that, and even when your own people cannot stand on its own two feet sometimes to embrace and say, hey, we got you. And so anyway, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent, but I just wanted to bring that up. I also have another article, and I'm going to read from that, and then shortly I'm going to take some calls. And I would love for you to get into this conversation with me. Please, please do. When we talk about Black youth, here's another article here by the Education Beat. It's Black youth face rising rates of depression, anxiety, and suicide. And here, this is January 2022, where it says here, nearly everyone has experienced a degree of anxiety or depression due to the pandemic, and we understand all that. But for young Black people also confronting persistent racism and ever-widening inequities, the current moment has led to an acute crisis in mental health. The suicide rate among youth, which for years trailed that, it was behind everyone, trailed that of Asian and white students, has now doubled since 2014. It's now twice the statewide average, far exceeding all other groups, according to the California Department of Public Health. 12 of every 100,000 Black 18 to 24-year-olds have died by suicide in 2020. In 2014, the Black suicide rate was about 25% lower than that of white students and 15% lower. But look at where it is now. It's doubled. Look at where it is now. The December advisory from the U.S. Surgeon General, gun violence, climate change, and economic uncertainty also play a role. The data is absolutely not surprising. Black students are in a crisis nationally, said April Clay, head of counseling and psychological services at California State University, Los Angeles. Many Black students are experiencing paralyzing anxiety and grief. It's hard to talk about, and it's hard for them to find help. Black people generally have suffered disproportionately during the pandemic, with higher death rates, higher hospitalization rates, and less access to health care, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. But the murder of George Floyd in May 2020 brought forth months of intense media coverage of police brutality and racism, which some Black young people said they found deeply stressful. The disparate impact of COVID plus these additional pressures have brought Black youth to the brink. Misdiagnosis also plagues Black youth struggling with mental health. A Black student who's acting out in class too often faces discipline rather than counseling, and Black people with more serious mental health challenges such as schizophrenia are more likely to end up in police custody than in psychiatric treatment. These are the facts. This is something we already know. We see it. We see it every day. We see it every day. But as I mentioned to Ms. Armstrong earlier today, I really want us to have this discussion. So I'm going to take the next 30 minutes, and we're going to have this discussion. And I see a number of people are on the line. So I'm going to go with my first caller here. Join in the conversation. Talk about how we can address these issues. What can we do to problem solve, to come up with some ideas as to how we can, you know, initiate programs in our communities, and what can we do to embrace our young people and let them know we're with them, let them know we love them, let them know we love you as you are, who you are, to be all that you can be, love them with the love of with the love of God, which is beyond conditions, no conditions, love on them, encourage them, speak into their lives. Okay, so I'm going to take the first caller. First caller, you're on the air. Hello? Are you there? okay? Are you there, Paula?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. I like the topic that you picked. Don't have a lot of answers regarding our youth and suicide, but what I do want to say that we as a people have to acknowledge mental health issues.
Yes. Yes.
And we have to let our youth know it's okay, that it's nothing to be ashamed of.
Right.
That's the key piece.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think we as older people of color have to acknowledge that it is something that has always been there. This is nothing new. It's just that the way it's being, the way you can get treatment now, whereas a long time ago you couldn't or it was frowned upon.
Yes.
But my thing is that I see mental illness like if you have a heart attack, that's acceptable. But if you have mental health issues, it's not.
Yes.
I mean, you're afraid to acknowledge that you have mental health issues.
Yes.
You're looked at differently if you do acknowledge it. So my question is, how do we get the older or the parents and behind this, you know?
Well, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was just thinking, you know, how do we approach this so that our youth can come to us for help?
I think it is happening because of celebrities that are acknowledging it. I think because of the fact that more and more celebrities, such as the tennis player, Osaka, the young tennis player who admitted to her mental health issues, or Simone Biles, the gymnastics champion, black woman, young black woman who admitted her mental health illnesses, or people like Serena Williams who come. I think because this generation is more ready for it than the generation before.
Okay.
But in the community itself, it's that stigma is still there. Because some people have even judged Osaka for complaining about her mental health issues. And so until we as a unit, as a community, accepted that, hey, this is a real thing, that we've been dealing with it, we just put it to the side and say, you know what, you know, Grandma so-and-so, she just wasn't right, or she didn't have it all upstairs. You know how we make these comments about each other. You know, her elevator don't go all the way to the top. You know, it's that stuff came out of our community. And so, you know, but we didn't have access. And since we didn't have access, not even for our physical well-being, never mind our mental well-being. So, but I think this generation here is more open to it and more accepting of the fact that this is a real issue. But within the community itself, we need to be a little, like you said, the older generation need to embrace it and say, hey, you know what? Yeah, you know, we need to get so-and-so some help. Oh, yeah, well, I'm now seeing this in a different light. I don't see it the way that I used to see it because that was the way I was brought up. So a lot of that generational mentality has to be, it needs to shed. It has to now transform and people need to be more open to understanding that this is a real condition. But it starts first in the home. It starts first with our families to say, hey, I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to beat you down. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to make you feel worse. You know, I'm going to love on you, support you, and help you through this process. Not judge, not beat them over the head with the Bible. Love on them where they are. And say, hey, I'm with you through this. I'm going to love on you through this. Let's get you the help that you need. Sometimes it's just that, you know, but we need to come to that consensus of saying, this is a real situation. Other communities do it all the time. They get help all the time. You know, if Johnny shot somebody, they don't go and, you know, they're like, well, Johnny had a mental illness. Johnny was upset. Johnny, it was bipolar. You know, all these things. Johnny needs, oh, he's not going to do time in juvie. We're going to send Johnny to a mental facility to get some help. But we don't do that. All right, there's like 5, 6, 7 people online. I'm going to go ahead to the next caller.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Caller?
Yes, hello, this is Ingrid. And I have a concern because I think the churches need to introduce this along with having, like they always, of course, we always have Bible study. But there are youth out there hurting. We even had a youth that I've known that actually domestic violence. So he felt like that person looked like his mom. And from there on, she said she was leaving, and now she's gone at 21 or 23. Mm. So things on that order. So we're not addressing it, I think, in the church, but that's what needs to be done. And, of course, on the Sunday school level, how can we introduce domestic violence? And my mother wanted to say something about that also.
Okay.
I'm Mildred. And I had a brother. He went to school from elementary on up to like 12th grade or 11th grade, and he had a spell on the school system area where he was attending school, and they had to take him away to a site to be, you know, treated and helped. And it was a while, you know, that he had to stay there too, because it just had, was his first experience with it, to where it took him out, where he just passed out with it. And my mother and father and all of the children at that time, it was 5 of us, was 3 girls and 2 boys. And my oldest brother was the one that had the mental illness attack. And it goes with you. You don't outgrow it, but you can learn to deal with it and cope with it. And that's what we did. My mom and dad were Christians, and we attend church, and he did too as well. But when things happen like that, it caused a lot of misunderstanding with the children.
Yeah.
And it caused us to want to think we may have caused it, but it's not that way. Anyway, God is able to help us. We got to keep and stay with him and ask him to guide us and strengthen us in things like that, because the need's going to be there for a long time. And some people can get help, and some don't get help, and some refuse help. But still, we kept trying and kept trying. We never gave up, and we know he lived to be 78 when he died, but it happened when he was like maybe 19 years old. But still, we dealt with it, and we continued to live in the community. And he was able to have 3 marriages. After each wife died, he married another one. And that was, you know, a blessing there, because we know if he lived to come out of it and work through it as well as he did with the medication he had and with the prayers we had for each other and the love the family gave him, let him know that we were still with him regardless of what he was going through.
That's the key, though. He had the support of his family. It was the community, the support of his family. They loved him unconditionally. They were there. They understood. You guys understood his situation. That is the key. When families and community can corral around the loved ones and say, hey, we got you. We understand. But, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of. This situation is, as you stated, with the medication and with the church and with his family, he was able to live out his life. And that is a beautiful story. Because not everyone's story, that's not everyone's story. And not everyone has that understanding. And so thank you for sharing that. That's a beautiful, beautiful story. Because we must corral around each other and love on each other. And not put this stigma on each other. with regards to mental health. Mental health is just as important as your physical health. It is part of your physical health because there's a discombobulation of your brain function, and some people's brains are wired differently. You know, I have a child who's disabled. I mean, he was born, you know, prematurely, but, you know, he suffered a brain hemorrhage. So, I mean, but his brain is rewired to do things differently. And so we need to understand this we need to really get to understanding what this is really all about. When they say someone is bipolar, when they say someone is schizophrenic, when they say that someone, you know, is suffering from depression, or when they say that someone has anxiety or panic attacks or things like that, that is a real physiological situation, which is why they're able to give you medication to help you cope and deal and go through that process. For some, it's trauma. Trauma is huge. PTSD is big. And we have a lot of PTSD in our communities. PTSD, post-traumatic syndrome. You don't have to go to war to have PTSD. You just be in the wrong household and have PTSD. You know? So these are things that we need to address. And yes, with the help of psychologists, psychiatrists, and yes, the church, yes, our families and communities, and corral around our youth and love on them and let them know that they do not have to be hopeless. All right, I'm going to go to the next caller. I have another caller here. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that beautiful story. Thank you. Next caller. Hello? Caller? Are you there? Okay, I'll go to the next person. Hello, caller? You there? Hello? Hello? Okay, that person's not saying anything. Let me go to the next one. I know some people were probably on hold for a minute. Hello, caller.
Hello. My turn?
Yes, go ahead.
I just want to say a lot of the young people nowadays don't even go to church. So, to get that infusion of the spiritual aspect, because I know a lot of people maybe don't even send their children to church anymore. So, you know, and then when people come to church and children come to church, it's not picked up. Like I said, it has to be in the home, and a lot of things are not picked up in the church, but we don't talk about it in the church like you had mentioned before. That is a topic that's not usually a topic of a sermon or not even affirmed in a sermon. I was talking to a young lady who has tried suicide before a couple of times, and this time I'm saying that you need to go to a counselor. And she said, can you be my counselor or pastor? I said, well, I'm going to be your support system, but you need to go to someone who is trained to do that. So her thing was, well, I can't tell a stranger my business. And I know at a certain point that was one of the attitudes we had in our families as Black people. Don't mm-hmm. tell nobody your business.
Mm-hmm. You know, what, absolutely.
Keep it. Get in. Yeah, that was a thing. And so I encouraged her, but that person can hear your business and help you work through your business as a professional. So I think that's also something we can look at. And I would like to look at some more studies to see if there are any categories of Black youth that kill themselves. Is it the country thing? Is it the city thing? I know it's all around, but, you know, some indications. So we can work on some specifics, but
yeah, everything that I read to you is from the psychologists, like Psychology Today, mm-hmm. American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. I'm pulling information that's coming from professionals, people who actually do the studies, people who actually go out there and collect the data.
The social data, I would like to know, you know, some of the, they said this or they said that, or with Twitch's thing, financial, with some of the other, you know, just breaking it down some more. But it is a something we have to talk about and work with.
Yeah, we have to. We have to, else we'll, I mean, I have a friend who, you know, I keep hearing it and I keep seeing it. You know, 22 years old, committed suicide back in November. Another 22, came out of the military, you know, from the Marines. And 22, 23 years old, comes home, kills himself. And this is in our community. I mean, it's happening everywhere, but we were not always the leading victims of this. We were not at the top of that, because we were always told, you know, from our religious mindset, our religious beliefs, if you kill yourself, you're going to hell. You know, I mean, those are biblical teachings that we had, that, you know, that that was not something that Black folks would do. Now, in spite of all the things that has happened in the community, I mean, we're talking atrocities. And you would have thought that our suicide rate would have been higher than that. But no, we're talking in the last 20 years now. What's different? What's different? So
I think one more thing I want to say is that in the last 20 years, we didn't have a support system of the neighborhood was your family.
Yeah, that's true.
Everybody kind of knew each other, and we just split apart. So even if I'm middle class and I'm in my house and all I do is go out and come in and go out and come in, I don't know my neighbors.
Right.
I don't know my neighbor's kids. Yeah.
Nope. I know what you mean. I grew up in the city, but we knew our neighbors on the block. And when my father would come home, and if they happened to see him, they would tell him, you know, hey, I saw your son over here, you know. But those things have been lost. And I will also say, by system, the system has also helped us to lose that. You know, that's why I said, unless these things are addressed systemically, child welfare, the justice system, All of that was never created to really be in the favor for people of color. So, you know, but within the communities themselves, Black folks knew how to look out for each other. Black folks knew how to say, hey, you know, there's Sister So-and-so's son walking down the street, and we know he's got a disability. We're going to try and help him. You're not going to take advantage of him. You know, you're right, you know. I want to say even further back than just 20 years ago. It's been a long time since communities really have come together and support one another. And no, we don't know each other. We don't. We just don't. But anyway, thank you so much for that. And I've got one more caller here, and I'm going to let them in as well. Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Good evening. The topic is a good topic, because I always think about the young kids and the things that are going on today, because in our community we've had two young men that has died within the last 2 weeks from overdose of the drugs. And the thing is, they're in their 20s. And early 30s, and we don't show them enough love and respect as people. We bash them and put them down more than trying to help them and talk to them in a way to let them understand that we do care, we do love them, and we want to see life be better for them. And we share the word with them, but we don't beat them down with the word, because that was my thing when I was growing up. If I seen some come, I know what was coming. I wanted to go the other way. I didn't want to hear it because that's all I heard. They beat me down and everything about, well, you know, you need to do this and do that. But we need to let them know we love them enough, show them respect, and just get close to them more and more. I have a 10-year-old grandson, well, great-grandson, and he's been bullied in school a while back. He's moved since then from the school. And he got to the point to where it got to him. He wouldn't let his mother know or anybody know what was going on, but you could kind of tell the difference. And we wasn't around him that much because he lives in another area from us. And he took it so much that he took on himself to take a knife to school. But him knowing he's not one to hurt anybody or fight back or nothing like that, and he didn't know anything about nothing like that, but he wanted to protect himself. Well, he got busted with a knife, suspended for 2 weeks. I told his mom, I said, you need to go to the school, get with the other kids' parents that's doing the bullying, bring the parents in to the principal's office, and y'all need to talk this out instead of letting it go the way that it is, because we don't know what's going through his mind and what he's thinking, because he was scared that somebody was going to jump on him and hurt him, but he wanted to do something about it. So we don't talk to our young kids enough about these things and understand and see what they're going through. We get on to them about certain things, but we're not willing to sit down and take enough time to listen to them and talk to them. Because some kids, they don't want to tell you anything. They don't want to discuss it with their parents or nobody else. They want to hold it in until it gets so bad and it becomes suicidal thoughts in their mind, to whereas there's no other way out. Nobody loves them. Nobody cares for them. So us as the older generation, we have to continue to talk to them, show them love, and like it was said earlier, not to beat them up and put them down and bash them for the things that they're doing. You try to uplift them and let them know we love you. We're there to help you to do whatever we can do that's in the right way, you know. And we continue to pray and let them know, because our great-grandkids now, when they come to stay with us, we tell them, we get down on our knees, we pray every night that they're here, and hoping that something that they'll see within us, like it was said, it starts in the home. If it don't start in the home and it get too far out of the home, then it's out of control, because nobody has the respect outside of that to give to them. It causes a lot of confusion and chaos to them, and it gets worse and worse. But we, as the older people, and the churches need to do more workshops and invite young kids and the young youth in to participate in these workshops, talk to them, and do things with them more, because that's what they did to us when we was younger. We'd get together as kids, walk upside the road, clean up or whatever, and then they'd have a little cookout or something for us to all come together and do things in the community. But all of that's gone now. You can't get anyone to step up and do these things. So I just wanted to say I enjoyed the topic, and everyone that's given the input, because this is a serious problem to our young black communities and young black youth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're crying. They're hurting.
Yes.
They're hurting, and you know, I see it on a regular basis, and it's like, you know, and it's sad because, you know, a number of our black youth are not able to make it to college, and then when they get there, they have so many obstacles facing them before they even get there, and then they have so many obstacles that they have to overcome just to get through, and so
that's right.
Yes, and yes, again, we must take on this. We must take this on as a people and as a community to say, hey, you know, the buck stops with us. We got to get a hold of our youth.
Sure enough.
Absolutely. So thank you so much. I got another caller on, and I'm almost running out of time, but I'm going to let this caller in. And so, caller, you there? Caller, you there?
Hello?
Yes, caller.
All right, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. So I guess what I would have to say about it, coming from the standpoint of coaching like kids, it's in every community. All the communities are running through the same kind of issues, a lot of the diagnosis, and then it's a lot of just little kids being bullies that are kind of continuing the issues. The reason why I say that, white, black, it doesn't matter. They have, like, cliques, even at young ages, especially on sports teams and in school. With them being in cliques, and if you're not a part of that, they feel like they're on the outside. And then the kids that are not being welcomed into the other kid don't see it as, you know, they're trying to bully the kid. They're trying to hurt him. They just see it as they don't want to be around that kid because he may not be a good player or he may not be cool or dress like this. It really comes down to the recognition because kids aren't doing it. Majority of kids aren't doing that with malice. It's not malice. You normally can see it ahead of time, the ones that are causing the issues. I had a kid, a little kid, at that time he had to be like a 10, 11. And he didn't feel like the other guys wanted to play with him or in, like, pass the ball or even help up.
So are you saying that the bullying is also... Hello? I guess we have a bad connection.
All subside. And, you know, was a little bit easier. That was my 2 cents. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
The issue is going to be more or less understanding and just recognizing it.
Yeah.
And just making sure our kids treat the other kids.
Oh. All right, guys. I'm going to – thank you so much. I'm going to have to close out because my thing is getting ready to shut me down. But I want to say thank you. I appreciate you guys. Thank you for calling in. This topic is really something I just wanted to bring to the forefront for us to talk about that, but also for you to be aware of what's happening. And so anyway, I'm ending and closing out. Peace and blessings to all of you. Thank you for calling and have a good evening.
Yes. Thank you.